Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Full Throttle Podcast for Monday, the 14th of June. And James Whittam and myself, Greg Haynes, we're on a high here. We've just come off air. And Supersport 300 at Misano, I've never seen anything like it.
Completely mental. Honestly, any number of, about 25 riders could have won it, really. I mean, it was I'm going to say a cracking race, but actually it was just madness from start to finish. Yeah, quite scary. A lot of jinking round, trying to get in and out of the slipstream. And it was just mad, completely mad. And it was a little bit survival of the fittest. There were some more intelligent and less intelligent riders than others. I mean, I think Victor Stamen took the kind of award for scariest. And probably Anna Carrasco and Tombo Amos, the one second the award for being the most intelligent. He caught out Tombo Amos in the end. Anna Carrasco went on to win, and what a win that was. Fantastic.
We're just watching the race back on some clips in the commentary box, and I've realised now what happened at the hairpin on the last lap. Gabriele Mastraluca hit Okaya, who crashed. He was hit by De Cancelis, so that's why Mastraluca was dropped back off the podium. Stamen had his penalty for exceeding track limits three times. There's no point going through every single incident because there's just too many of them. You've got to watch that back.
Yeah, you've got to watch it. It's completely mental.
It's on the Eurosport app.
Yep.
And Eurosportplayer.com as well. Let's listen in first of all to give us a chance to get our breath back to Anna Carrasco, because she's had a horrible back injury last year and fully recovered from that now. But it was Anna Carrasco who won the race.
Anna Carrasco, your first victory of the 2021 season. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Honestly, I didn't expect the victory today because yesterday was a hard race. Also, the weekend was not going as I wanted, but I cannot be more happy than now. We are so far from here after the injury, and I want to say thanks to my team, to all my family, because they helped me a lot to be here today.
Thank you.
Well done, Anna Carrasco, and well done, Carla Grau, and the whole team. That was absolutely crazy. Well, coming up in the podcast, we've got a magic moment from the man who's done such a great job on the Eurosport sofa alongside Matt and James Hayden this weekend, Christian Idden. So we'll look forward to Christian's magic moments in a few minutes' time. But I guess, first of all, James, we've got to talk about World Superbike, because we've had two new winners for the season. Michael Rinaldi doing a double.
Yeah.
And Toprak Razgatlioglu. And it seems as though the championship is very much on.
Yeah, it does. Toprak first. Toprak has finally got a win. He's been there or thereabouts all season and managed over the three races to nibble Jonathan Rea's, leading the championship down to, what's he down to now?
20 points.
20 points. Yeah, so good weekend for Toprak. Finally got his win that we've been expecting, his first win this season, anyway. Yeah, great. Looked competitive all weekend. Looked to be riding for the win all weekend as well. Loose and fast and good. You know, like when Toprak's quick, he's got that much bike control. He almost looks out of control most of the time, but because it's him and he's got such good bike skill, he doesn't tend to make a lot of mistakes. He looks like he's going to do most corners, but just brilliant riding for Toprak. And Michael Ruben Rinaldi, finally got going this season. He's looked on the back foot for both of the previous meetings to me, both Aragon and Estoril. He's not looked as though I think he's looked nervous. He's looked like he's been nervous in a factory team, looked like he's felt a little bit of extra pressure because of that. No, this meeting, fair enough, it's his own meeting. He's got a lot of experience around Misano. He lives 10 minutes up the road in Rimini. But yeah, what a brilliant, brilliant meeting. Top point scorer, 2 wins and a second, and really looked the pick of the crop this weekend.
Yeah, pick of the crop. Good way to describe them, I think. Let's listen in then to both of them. Michael Rinaldi, an absolutely superb weekend. He's dropped only 5 points. He scored 57 from a maximum of 52. That is, 57 from a maximum of 62. Here's Michael Rinaldi and Toprak Razgatioglu, the two winners at the weekend.
Michael, it wasn't the third win in a row, but I don't think you're too displeased at that. A near perfect weekend in front of your home fans.
Yes, I'm really happy. Not perfect, but almost. Sincerely, this afternoon Toprak had a better pace. I tried my best, but my best wasn't enough to win. So it was easy to make a mistake, easy to crash. And last 4 laps, I must say to myself, it's okay second. I hate arrive second, but it's okay. I'm happy about the weekend. So I want to thank the fans, the team, and everybody all around the world. Thank you.
Congratulations, Michael. Toprak, you told us so many times this season that you were tired of podiums, you needed that win, and here it is, a fantastic race.
Finally, I am win. Today, this week, we are too much working for this, but all races, second, I say my team and last race, I need win because enough second. But I am here, I am very happy. Thanks to my team because this weekend, an incredible job. Because, okay, I am ride a bike, but important also my bike. And yeah, we are happy. Thank you and see you in next race. Thank you.
Congratulations, Toprak.
Very well deserved too. Great characters. Jonathan Rea then, not as much damage limitation as Scott Redding had to apply in the races, James, but even so, no Kawasaki win in the Superbike class this weekend.
Yeah, 3 podiums though. What are you going to do? You know, we all know that Jonathan Rea, if he hasn't got the pace or doesn't feel he's got the setup or bike exactly in the right place for him to win, well, he'll take the seconds and he'll take the thirds, and it's paid off before, and you know, he did what he had to do with it. I think it was a little bit of a damage limitation exercise, really. They didn't go pre-season. They didn't do the pre-season test at Misano. Maybe that affected him a little bit, although conditions and certainly track temperature very different to when they were here earlier on in March. So did it make any difference? Certainly struggled a little bit with setup. Wasn't too far away. But still, 3 times on the podium, it's not a bad weekend, is it?
Exactly. And he's the only rider, actually, who's finished on the podium in all of the 9 races so far this season. And if you just think, Jonathan Rea could have quite easily had 2 big fat zeros next to his name when he was pushed off the track at Aragon by Gerloff and had the presence of mind to go across the gravel and the grass and not try and turn it because he would have crashed. And then he let some riders through when he rejoined. He did everything right. And then this weekend, race 1 on Saturday, the mother of all saves. Incredible.
Yeah, it was. He'd lost the front, the rear went then, the thing's sliding along, his leg is completely jammed under the fairing, his elbow's on the floor, the handlebars are turned in because the front wheel's struggling for grip, the bike was laid across on its right-hand side, and he just kept with it, he stayed with it, he dug his knee in, he dug his elbows in, he pushed, he forced the handlebars into the tarmac, and the thing came back up again. I think it's as far as I've seen anybody go on their knee and still get away with it, with a possible exception of a couple of Marc Márquez incidents. I remember turn 1 at Valencia being a massive one for Márquez that he saved. But this was a big, big save for Jonathan Rea. And let's remember, these superbikes, way more than MotoGP bikes. So a bit more difficult to get away with shoving your knee in the ground and picking it up. The amazing thing for me is that he stayed with it and kept trying to get it back up, because a lot of riders, in fact most, would have just bailed. And he didn't. Brilliant save.
And Jonathan said when he was chatting with Matt Roberts and James Hayden and Christian Eden on the show on Sunday that he actually used his left leg. He said he got a bit lucky, didn't he? And he used his left leg I think it got caught on the seat unit, did he say?
So what, sort of so it couldn't fall off the thing?
So yeah, sort of pulled him more to the right. I think that's what he said, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, certainly, it didn't matter what happened. He didn't give up on it. He didn't let go of the handlebars. He didn't try and get away from the sliding bike and, you know, save himself injury. Because if you stay with your bike and then it grips and flips you over or whatever happens, you hit a barrier still, you know, connected to your bike, well, the injury is going to be worse. So to have the, I won't even say presence of mind, to have the minerals to actually stick with it and try and save it. Yeah, and not only that, he dropped about 4 seconds in the incident and he only lost the race by 5. So he didn't lose too much and he got going quick. And yeah, brilliant. Good save that.
Yeah, it does make you think that he certainly would have had a very, very good chance of attacking Rinaldi. But what's done is done, I suppose. Just quickly before we move on from that, what percentage of riders do you reckon would have even attempted to save that?
Don't know. I'd be plucking a figure, but not many. Yeah, there's many that are just, as soon as that front end goes, you think, well, that's it, I'm off, I'll bail.
I would just throw in as well a shout out for Scott Redding, because I think, although he didn't have a great weekend by his standards, I actually think, under the circumstances, I think he did have a great weekend. Really good damage limitation after what happened on Friday.
Yeah, lost half the first session with the bike blowing up, and then lost 20 minutes of the second session, so half the second session as well. When he really needed, he lost that because he didn't get off the track immediately when he was given the meatball flag. A cruise round, albeit offline, and mostly actually off the track. He did it on the concrete part, so didn't spread any oil anywhere for anybody else to hit. But anyway, he was penalised 20-minute detention, as it were, for the FP2 session. Cost him dearly, actually, because he needed the track time, didn't have perfect setup. So it did cost him, but didn't give up, dug in, and because Jonathan Rea wasn't dominant in this at this meeting, only ended up dropping 7 points to his championship rival. So yeah, it was not a such a damaging weekend for Scott where it could have been.
Yeah, they would have taken that, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
He only dropped 7 points to Jonathan Rea after the mood they were all in at Ducati on Friday night.
Definitely.
All well nigh unbelievable, really. Let's talk about tyres. Right, so we had two qualifying tyres available for the first time.
Yep.
What did you make of that?
Yeah, this was to get around the problem that if a yellow flag's displayed in the 15-minute single one and only qualifying session for superbikes, then it doesn't cost you your fastest lap if the yellow flags are out because your lap's cut. If you go past the yellow flag or the yellow flags are out anywhere and you're on that whatever lap you go past that yellow flag, your lap's cut. And if that happens to be a fast lap on your qualifying tyre, you're not going to go as quick and that's going to cost you a lot of grid positions. So they've decided that the best way out of that and not have it happen again is to give everybody two qualifying tyres. So if they do get held up on one of them, then they get a second bite of the cherry. What that means is it's more of a hectic session because everybody's going to use those two. It's not like you're going to keep one in reserve. You're going to use both. And in actual fact, when you've got a qualifying rear tyre on, it takes you probably 3 or 4 corners. Different riders are different. Some can make the best out of it earlier on. Most riders take a couple of corners, 3 corners, half the lap, whatever, to just understand how much grip that rear tyre is giving them and make the most of it. But when you've got one to put in and have one go, and then that gives you understanding, and then you get the second one, I think it'll make a little bit of a difference going forward to lap times. I think it'll bring him down by probably a couple of tenths of a second.
We've still got the magic moment to come from Christian Idden, but first of all, World Supersport. So, yeah, track limits again were discussed at some length in the show on Sunday. And Steve Odendaal exceeded them 3 times, had a long lap penalty, which eventually became a post-race time penalty because it was given so late in the race. And as a result, loses a race win. It's the first time we've seen that happened before, a race win compromised because of a long lap penalty. But rules are rules, I suppose.
Yeah, they all know the rules. I was really disappointed and I felt really sorry for Stephen Odendaal because that second race that he actually went across the line first before he even knew, before Agata knew of the penalty, and therefore they're kind of exchanging results, really. He'd ridden really well. They'd obviously made some changes overnight because he looked a lot more competitive in the second Supersport race of the weekend, did Stephen Odendaal, than did in the first. But he'd had a brilliant ride. He'd had a really, really good ride. It had been a difficult race. There'd been a lot of bumping and barging and people off and incidents had been... We thought there was going to be a red flag at one point with the Thule incident down there at Tremonto. Marshalls did a good job getting it cleared up. There was also oil down, and there was, in the second incident, there was a red flag. So the race had to be run over 12 laps. That was for oil down that I think caused the accident of
Maria Herrera.
Maria Herrera. So it was an incident pack race that Odendaal seemed to get the best of and get across the line first. So I was really disappointed when he was given the penalty. However, we did see him off the track onto the green paint a couple of times, and I don't think he can really complain too much. He was sort of guilty as charged, but disappointing for him really, because there's a championship at stake, I feel, with him.
You know, I'm just thinking as well, because it looked almost certain, didn't it, as though oil or something had leaked out onto Maria Herrera's rear tyre.
Yeah.
That bike had been pretty badly smashed up, hadn't it, in the first race when she got pushed off by Alcoba.
Yeah.
I wonder whether that's something.
Maybe.
That's
and,
that.
And sometimes it's something as simple as a water hose, a cooling hose not tightened up, or a slightly frayed oil pipe that they didn't spot, and then when the oil pressure gets up to maximum in the second race, it bursts that out. So yeah, it can be something like that, but certainly I don't think the Maria Herrera accident was her doing. I hope she's all right, and certainly it caused a red flag, and it had to be stopped because there was quite a lot of fluid down there.
Yeah, poor Maria, though. That's two really good points finishes that have been completely taken away from her.
By no fault of her own.
Exactly, pushed off the track at the last corner on Saturday, and then that problem on Sunday. We weren't going to go into detail about every single incident over the weekend because there's been so many, but what we can say, of course, is that we're very, very pleased Eugene Laverty's okay. Yeah. Scary incident on Saturday. Chas Davis has had a nightmare of a weekend, and he actually, of course, James, had to pull into the pits with physical issues after the crash in the sprint race.
And let me tell you, he's a tough lad. If the pain was too much for him to take, well, it must have been bad. I think probably what we're going to find out is it looked to me like he'd dislocated or popped the shoulder out and it had gone back in the incident itself. It clipped the back end of, was it Myers?
Yes, it was.
That flipped him almost like a front end high side, if you like, and it dumped him on the track. His shoulder touched down first, and I think it just knocked it out of a joint for either while he got back into the pitch. They didn't call it as that, so I think it will have gone back in straight away, but that's a painful, painful injury. And think, you've got, you know, with as many changes of direction as we've got at Misano, you've got to hold the bike. A lot of work's been done by your legs, but a lot of work has been done by your upper body as well, and your shoulders are key to that.
So to sum up our winners of the weekend, if you didn't see all the races, Superbikes, Rinaldi did a double, and then Toprak in World Supersport, it was Dominic Agata who did a double for Ten Carter. So he's won three races, and Steve Odendaal's won three. Great championship fight there. And in the Supersport 300s, Adrian Huertas on Saturday, Ana Carrasco, as we've already said, on Sunday. Now, a man who was overseeing the whole thing and doing a great job of describing what was happening for us as a pundit was Christian Idden. He was in the studio with Matt and with James. And this week's magic moment comes from Christian Idden. We had a great one last week from Barry Nutley. Let's see what Christian's got to say.
Now then, boys, right, my magic moment is my first ever racing memory. So I'm going to take you way, way back. And it's not my first racing memory, it's my first memory of sort of being at a racetrack. And it was back when my dad had, I think, just finished his racing career, but was still involved in the paddock a little bit. And we were at the 500 Grand Prix, as they were back then. And at Donington Park, I can't remember exactly how old I would have been, but I was pretty much a nipper. My first ever racing memory is at Redgate Bar or Lodge, whatever it was back then when they had it, when there was basically a pub at Turn 1. And the Australian wild man that was Anthony Gobert had me swinging upside down, and I can actually remember quite vividly my hair just scraping the floor as he swung me, held by my ankles, left to right, and I think he wasn't exactly in a full fit state to be doing such a thing with a child I don't think he knew, i.e. me. But the biggest memory I have of that moment, apart from my hair just brushing the ground, was my mum going absolutely clean nuts at him because he was had her pride and joy by the ankles swinging from side to side. Anyway, I got away with the escapade, and I think Gobert managed to sober up and did quite well the following day from memory. So that's my magic moment, my first ever race memory. Cheers, guys.
the pub at Redgate Corner. It sounds like there's been a few incidents there over the years.
Yeah, and actually, I've known Christian basically since he was born because I used to race with his dad, Paul. And in actual fact, when Paul, when Christian was a real youth, I mean, his dad had him on bikes, like many of us do. You got your kids on bikes from them being about 3 years old. Christian was racing competitively from about five or six, if I remember rightly. And his dad used to come over to buy Avgas for Christian's little two-stroke motocross bike, and he used to bring Christian with him sometimes. So it was I've known Christian a long, long time, and can I say, well done in the studio. His analysis was brilliant, and I really enjoyed it actually. Yeah, and good looking BSB this year, Christian.
Yeah, definitely. We'll talk about BSB in a second. Anthony Gobert, of course, was mentioned there as well. Memories of Anthony Gobert?
Yeah, memories. Mixed memories of Anthony Gobert. I always get asked who was the most talented person you ever raced with. And if in terms of natural talent, I don't think you could get much better than Anthony Gobert. He was exceptionally talented on a bike. In fact, to the point that he didn't really know how he was doing it. So when it started to go wrong for whatever reason, it was difficult for him to fix because he'd never had to work that hard at it in the first place. He was just brilliantly talented. He came past me in the wet of Phillip Island on a bike that wasn't as good as mine, on tyres that weren't as good as mine, and cleared off in the distance. And if I'd have tried to stay with him, I'd have lasted two corners and gone in the trees. So, an unbelievably talented man. Other memories of Anthony, the dafter side to go, but always liked to drink, got himself in and out of trouble, and there was a couple of fights in the paddock, I remember, and just a real character was Anthony, but in terms of raw talent on a bike, unbelievable.
Right, stay with us for the last few minutes of this podcast. A bit of talk about BSB while we've got Whit with us, because it's just around the corner, not this coming weekend, but the one after, Alton Park, the first meeting of the season. Okay, so you've been to, I think, two tests, haven't you? Alton Park and Donington Park for tests this pre-season, James. Obviously, to see what's happening, catch up with people, shoot some stuff for our Eurosport programme. What should we expect from BSB this year?
From BSB, you can expect exactly what we are used to seeing from BSB, and that is hard, close action, different riders winning, different manufacturers winning. One of the reasons for that is we go to such diverse circuits in the UK for BSB. So circuits like Cadwell, you're going to almost by default get a different rider and bike combination winning at Cadwell as you are, let's say, at Thruxton. Completely different nature to the tracks, and then different again at, let's say, Knockhill, which is a real scratcher's paradise. So expect the same. Expect the usual suspects up front, but that's not to say we're not going to see somebody pop up who we don't expect. And just about every manufacturer looks good at this point. I think they're all in the mix. I think the new BM looks good. Yamaha's going well. I think Suzuki looks like it's going well as well. So you can't really, you know, all of them. Pre-season favourite, haven't really got one. If I had to put money on it, you'd probably put it somewhere near Josh Brooks, but not straight on the nose, I don't think. It's a difficult one to call. And at this time in the season, just before it starts, that's a brilliant position to be in, I think.
Having not been at those tests myself, the feeling I get from chatting with you and chatting with riders and other people is that perhaps the BMW is the most improved bike?
Yeah, I think the BMW, it looks a lot more competitive than it does in World Superbike trim, because one of the things we see in Britain is there's lots of these quirky circuits. It's got some aerodynamic aids. It's got less of the electronic sort of interference, because in BSB we're on MoTeC controlled ECU. So that's a level playing field for everybody in the UK. That seems to be benefiting BMW. But I think there's a little bit of something in these wings, you know, at the front, causing a bit of downforce, not too much. But there's three or four circuits in the UK where the bike gets big wheelie problems, where riders without any devices have to shut the bike off. And the word after Alton Park, which is 3 points on that circuit where you really have to stop the bike wheeling. To do that, you've got to shut the throttle or hit the rear brake. And that obviously causes the bike's forward motion to be impeded somewhat. And these wings seem to be at work, or seem to be working there. Chatted with Hickey there, he said that. So let's hope we've got a competitive BM.
Yeah, and you have to think that will go particularly well then at places like Alton Park, coming up over the top of Clay Hill.
Alton Park, Knockhill. Cadwell Park, Knockhill, yep.
Cadwell, yeah.
Yep.
But interestingly, Alton and Knockhill, of course, because they're the first two on the schedule, aren't they?
Yep.
So we will see what happens. Now, of course, one final thing I will say, without getting into any detail, because it would be a waste of time, but by the time this podcast has gone out and you're listening to us, We will have had an announcement from the UK government to see what the latest is in terms of Freedom Day or the delay to Freedom Day or whatever's going to happen. Let's hope for the absolute minimal effect and minimal disruption for both BSB and, of course, the Donington World Superbike Round, which is the next on the agenda. But this weekend, we're off. Next weekend is Alton Park and then Donington World Superbikes. We'll be back, though, with the podcast next Monday. No regs weekend, but there will still be a podcast. That'll be Monday, the 21st of June. And we're going to be joined by Tom Booth Amos after a very dramatic Supersport 300 and great disappointment to the end of his weekend at Mizana. So Tom Booth Amos on the show next week. But James, for now, thanks very much. It's been a hell of a weekend of commentary, hasn't it?
Cheers, Greg.
Hell of a weekend of racing.
Great cup of tea for us, I think, now.
Yeah, or something stronger.
Yeah, maybe.
I'll see you at Alton Park.
Cheers, buddy.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.